Visible is a wireless carrier that is not invisible. It is pretty clear from the name. Actually, radio waves are invisible. And I can say this with authority as a licensed amateur radio operator. That being said, Visible won't be giving you the power to see light outside the visible spectrum. It's actually way better because having that ability would make getting around very difficult and distracting. What you do get with Visible is unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. You get one line of wireless, just $25 a month, which is great in these times of economic uncertainty. That is one line for $25, taxes and fees included. So whatever you're doing at this moment, please stop. Switch immediately. Now, monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com. Wir gerne sehen, was ist los? It's deinen Freund Seth. I'm learning German. Yeah, in case you didn't know what that was. That is me trying to impress you with the little German that I know. Right now, I am actually learning German. I took it in high school. I goofed off the entire time. I did some other language learning apps. They taught me things like where the taxi stand is and how to find a bus, but not a lot of conversational German. Thankfully, that's what Babbel is all about. Babbel teaches you language conversationally, which, let's face it, that is what you want to know anyway. I don't know. When I was in school, you learned like how to count. You learned like the colors. You learned the shapes. Those are all important things, but they don't help you when you're in like Cologne, Germany with Ein Nierenstein, which, by the way, is German for kidney stone, an experience I can unfortunately speak personally to. But I've been using Babbel to learn to speak German again, better than I have before. I actually really like it because it is conversational. It's a little bit more relaxed. One of the things that it does that I really like is it'll sometimes show you what the literal English translation is. And I don't know why, but I find that very helpful in sort of understanding the structure, the grammar of a language and sort of putting myself into that mind space. Since I'm only in Germany for Gamescom, which is like a week, week and a half, I'm not immersed in the German language. I'm not immersed in German culture. So what I do is the second best thing. I'm taking Babbel. Hopefully this year when I go to Germany, I'll be able to impress all the Germans with how much German I know from learning through Babbel. The app has pronunciation recognition, so you'll be able to learn how to speak better with your accent, how to actually properly pronounce the words. That way you won't get made fun of by a group of older German men because you said apple strudel and not Apfelstrudel. No, it's really cool. I'm going to say right now there is a special limited time deal for our listeners. Right now you can get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners, because you guys are the best ones, by the way, at babbel.com/realm. Get 60% off at babbel.com/realm. That is spelled babbel.com/realm. Rules and restrictions may apply. Nintendo!
To Nintendo Voice Chat for the week of May 26, 2016. I am Jose Otero, and this is IGN's Nintendo Show. So we have a lot going on today, and I just slurred my show. But joining me this week, Brian Altano.
Brap, brap.
Andrew Goldfarb.
Hong Kong.
And Alana Pierce.
Bop, bop.
There we go. Well, bop, bop. Okay.
It's barp. I just don't say Oz because I'm Australian.
Oh, yes. Got it. Okay.
Barp, barp.
Luckily,
you're Australian.
Luckily, that's a word that doesn't have any R's in it, so that'll be fine.
There barp? We go.
Australian.
And if you want to watch the awesome adventures of NVC, you can do that by heading over to YouTube, youtube.com/Nintendo Voice Chat. One word, do not search for NVC. You're not going to find our show that way, or you might, but good luck. you can also leave us feedback on iTunes, like Ryan the Great, who gave us a great rating and said, "We're a weekly delight. As someone born in the 80s and now in his 30s, I can't tell you how much I look forward to the show.
Aww.
I have been a Nintendo fan since the beginning. Really appreciate the work you do." And he especially made a shout out for the music. Thank you very much, Ryan. And of course, we're really grateful for your support. So this episode, we're talking about, let's kick things off with Kirby Planet Robobot.
Aww.
Which... half the table has been playing at least.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, Alana.
Yeah. Have you been playing it?
Do you like Kirby games?
I love Kirby.
Okay, yeah, we got to hook her up. We'll take care of that.
So 3/4 of the table have been playing it.
Yeah.
Because I've been playing it too.
75%.
You don't have to do that.
You guys are all so good at math.
Thank you.
This is amazing.
It amazes me so much.
Wow.
Because we're counting the days until we hear something about an X.
I will say that I was almost sort of fatigued on Kirby games for a while there. We had a running joke on this show that they sent out the Kirby's at the end of a console cycle.
Pear Schneider original.
Yeah, good stuff, Pear. I love Kirby games. I grew up playing them. I feel like they always add this like tiny little hook that's supposed to keep the formula going, and it doesn't always resonate with me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it doesn't stick the whole way. This, on the other hand, feels very different than the last few Kirby games, because for the first time ever, you have this like mech suit. And it's different than just getting power, and it's different than just like riding an animal like they used to do back in the day. And it actually changes things up, because instead of being able to just fly and flutter, it actually gives you some platforming elements, because the mech suit can't just start flying around in the air.
Does it feel like Meta Knight in a way?
Kind of, but like way heavier.
And it also changes the powers themselves. So it's like, not only, it's not like you pick up a mech suit and your power up is mech suit. It's like, so if you pick up bombs, like you can throw bombs like as normal Kirby, and if you pick up like the stone thing, you can like, you know, stomp down as a statue, and it's like all the usual powers. If you pick those up while in the mech suit, you get variations on a theme.
That's
so
cool.
It's like you can shoot out bombs that climb up walls, and you can the stone power becomes like these big like stone fists that you can like knock stuff down with. There's a jetpack power in this game, and if you get it as Mech Kirby, it becomes like a plane. There's like this weird like side-scrolling like pilot level. Like there's all these just fun ways that it mixes up how you're moving around the world, and it's like it feels a lot like Triple Deluxe, but it mixes it just enough where it doesn't just feel like a retread. Like mechanically, it essentially is Triple Deluxe. Like you're still graphically, it's about the same. You're still moving around in the same way. It's obviously nothing like Canvas Curse or Rainbow Curse or anything.
No. But I think if you played a Kirby game before in the last 15 years, you're going to be familiar with the way this one plays.
Yeah,
you know?
But I really like it. I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'm like very obsessive when it comes to these games, where I'm trying to find in this game they're called Code Cube, in each level. So there's like three hidden, kind of like the big coins in New Super Mario Brothers or whatever.
Man, Donkey Kong Country kills me with that kind of stuff.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, no, I feel that Kirby games are really tough, at least for me to approach, or maybe it's an age range thing. Like I always feel like they are consistently well made, but they tend to skew towards what I feel are younger players because of how powerful Kirby is, because of how many copy abilities there are, and the move sets are deep and they're fun and it's easy to pick up and play. But I always feel like, at least when I'm playing a game, I'm looking for that last little bit, that thing that finally tips me over the edge of, oh, like there's something to this combat, or oh, this is a really challenging game, or oh, that thing that hooks me.
Difference between great and good.
Yeah. And for me, at least what I found with this thing is that, the mech suit is it. Like the Robobot, which is what I guess they're calling it.
Do you get to choose when you pop in and out of the mech suit, or is that...
So that's a good question. It really depends. So you'll find a mech suit in the middle of a stage, and then for the next portion of the stage, they'll have enemies that you can copy abilities from. Now that copy ability, like Andrew was saying, is different depending on it. So something like Cutter, and I hope I'm getting this right, instead of being the blade that you toss and it spins in the air, because you have that little Spartacus helmet on. You remember that? Like that jam. The suit instead throws these, they look like saw blades.
They're
and it just shoots them out.
Oh, that's cool.
And you just wreck the environment.
That's really cool.
The other, the knight looking guy, which I believe that's the sword copy ability, instead there are these big plasma swords on the robot itself, and you just wreck things.
It's really
you can
fun.
Break the environment. Mm-hmm. You can sort of use then the mech suit. The general mech suit can unscrew certain parts of the world, because everything is robot themed. And so one of the things that they did too is that you basically find these sections that they're locked off, and you have to insert your fist into it, and
so
then
you couldn't
spin
get to it unless
analog.
You're in the mech suit, basically.
Yeah, so that section of the level is tailored to the mech suit, and they expect you to be in the mech suit, but then you can dismount at certain spots, and when you do, you can then run and like solve a quick challenge and then jump back in the mech suit if you need
to. It mixes it up puzzle wise too, because it's like sometimes you see little, like, there's these, like, I guess they're, like, pipes that you go through as, like, Kirby. And there are little parts where, like, you'll be in the mech suit. It's very much a mech suit part of the stage, but you'll see one of those little pipes, and it's like, okay, I need to stop here. And there's, like, you can only get out of the mech suit at these little, like, stations that essentially, like, take it off of you. And
okay,
so you can
so
stop, take
not,
it off, and then go do a platform.
So there's not, like, a Mario-type mechanic where the effect of the mushroom wears off if you get hit a certain amount of times.
Yeah, no, because Kirby games have always been driven by either a life bar or some kind of thing, and that's where I feel that it is geared towards a younger audience, just that Kirby's so powerful.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like, that's
mech
not...
Mech kind of increases that.
Yeah, and it does, but it does it in a fun way that Triple Deluxe to me was a sour note. Like, people are still mad at me for giving that game a 6, which is okay on IGN scale, but the thing that really didn't sit well with me is that it was just such a by-the-numbers Kirby game, and yeah, there was a new ability that I think it was Hypernova or something, where you were able to inhale like entire monsters or parts of a page or
like
a screen or something. Yeah. But it was a very one and done idea. It didn't have a lot of different applications.
Yep.
And I feel like the robot suit completely spins that on its head because you can just jump through
crappy
stuff.
I mean, I think Triple Deluxe is a really charming game.
Yeah. Definitely. No, yeah.
I can't imagine a mech suit being charming. If you're going to make a parallel.
So it actually is, which is weird.
Really?
Yeah, no, it's, that's the thing. I wouldn't have thought either.
So it still has like a cute appeal to it.
It does, and which is awesome because there's this sticker system where you can unlock these stickers and then kind of like trick out your mech suit.
Huh.
So you can put a like a sticker on the side of yours that says like, I'm cool.
Yeah, mine has like a cute little hamster on it.
Yeah, so the first mech suit I got in the game, I was like, this thing's really awesome. And then I inhaled the fire power up, which has been in Kirby games for years. But it immediately gives you this like, you know the clothes that Guy Fieri wears?
Oh, my God. It's or like Bam Bam Bigelow.
Yeah, or Bam Bam Bigelow. Like the big bowling shirt with the flames all over it. All of a sudden, you're doing that, and a lot of the enemies in the game and the power-ups in the game, they drop, like, hamburgers and french fries. So I was like, this is like a dystopian robot mech suit Diners and Drive-Ins and Dives.
That
like,
actually does sound pretty great.
It's so it's really fun. It's definitely a good twist on something that I felt, and I'm right there with you, Jose, where I'm like, it's always been very cute and very fun, but it hasn't necessarily been very challenging, and it's been a little bit stale. But I think to what Goldfarb's saying, it's really cool that you can go into these levels. And it's like, it's the same way Pixar stuff scales, right? Where it's like, it's fun for kids, it's fun for adults. Any kid will be able to fly through these stages, but to actually go in and find all the hidden unlockables is like, and that's what Nintendo really excels, right?
Which
they've been doing for years.
But you get to choose the amount of depth, and it also sounds like the mech suit gives you two separate play styles. Like, I like having to approach puzzles like in A Link Between Worlds, having to think like, okay, now that I have this ability to become a painting, I have to approach this environment completely differently. Like, I like that kind of thing as well.
That was my favorite thing about that game, is just that new process of like, what can I do with this?
That's awesome.
Yeah. They also kept, from Triple Deluxe, the kind of moving between the background and the foreground, which is actually something I think works super, super well in this engine on portable, because it's like, with 3D on, it actually looks really cool. There's a level where there's like, you're going almost through like a town, and there's like cars coming towards you that are on a hill, and it's like there's like traffic lights you have to kind of wait for or jump over. But it's smart because like as you move between the background and foreground, you can like see secrets in the background. It's really easy to go get them, and just a nice little system. I mean, like, I wrote about this game at PAX and kind of talked about how like I don't think like the mech mechanic is awesome, but it's not like completely game-changing the way that, like, Canvas Curse was or anything. But I feel like that's fine. Like, that's kind of what I want from a Kirby game.
Sure. I think the thing that just always blows my mind consistently with Kirby games before we end up moving on is that they pack so much into them. Like, standard Kirby games, the experimental ones, they just it feels like more of a one-and-done idea. So when you have, like, your Canvas Curse or what have you, or even Epic Yarn was another one where, you know, it was just a very straightforward kind of game. But this one, you've got a story mode. You've got Meta Knight Nightmare Returns, which is basically that Meta Knight mode that you're sort of doing challenge stages. You're doing the arena, which comes back, and that's like boss rush. Then you're doing two completely different mini games in this Kirby 3D Rumble, which is more like a puzzle action game where
it's
basically
like
enemies spawn. Yeah.
Oh, that's
enemies
cool.
spawn, you have to pick them up but kill them efficiently.
Yeah.
In a Kirby game. I can't believe I just said that. But there's that aspect to it. And then there's Team Kirby Clash, which is this game's multiplayer game, essentially. So you're able to, you know, only one person needs to own the cartridge, which is always cool when they do the one card multiplayer thing. But you can play with up to four people, and you basically fight a mini boss together. And it's a class system. So you have, you know, you have your warrior, you have your magician, you have have, etc. And it's all themed within that Kirby kind of space.
It's a lot of value for one thing.
Yeah.
Really
yeah,
good.
No, they always do a really good job of doing that. And I feel like this one's no exception. You know, just even a four-player, like, Brawl-style RPG minigame is just like, wait, what? And it's not the deepest RPG in the world. It didn't.
Yeah, but why not?
Yeah, why not? Exactly.
Also, the music has been stuck in my head nonstop for this entire week. And
in a good
it
way?
Makes me feel insane. Yeah. Just so happy.
Yeah,
but it makes. I feel like you're kind of a Kirby. If we had to, like, give you a personality of a Nintendo character.
There it is.
You are kind
you're
of a Kirby.
All
right. Thanks, guys.
No worries.
Kind of the powers of others.
Yeah, you just keep eating people around the office. It's really strange.
Oh, so that's what happened to that guy. I was wondering what happened to that dude.
R.I.P. Mitch.
Yeah. Nobody actually gets fired. They just get
Mitch,
eaten
Mitch
by
Mitch didn't go to another pub. He just got inhaled.
I just run his Twitter now.
Right. Got it. All right, so next segment is the companion segment to NX Das Hype, which is, of course, whenever we hear some Nintendo news that is in a positive light for NX, we try to put it under the Das Hype banner.
Yep.
This is NX Dibble and Scheiße, which...
Well, I'm learning so much German on this show.
We are. Get your kids out of the room because it's not a nice thing to say. But this week was a weird week for just NX in general because apparently, so this is, I'm going to try and run this down as quickly and as succinctly as I can, I promise. Mitsubishi UFJ Morgan Stanley basically issued a report written by a business analyst that was supposed to sort of look at Nintendo's business and forecast. You know, it's a summary. This is not an uncommon practice. This was written in Japanese. But there was a line in that report that said, the driving force up until now has been new businesses, obviously speaking for Nintendo, such as health services, theme parks, and mobile games. But they'll switch over to a next-generation system, NX, and a next-gen handheld device called MH. Went the internet, and everyone was like, well, where did that come from, and what are you talking about?
MH.
Well, most folks didn't realize that this was speculation on the
My handheld. Analyst.
Yeah, it was like...
My handheld.
All right, we can make that work.
Sure, there it is.
And the NX is just not Xbox.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, so basically, this was the weirdest thing to wake up to, because for the past year, Nintendo has been saying NX exists, right? We know since when that happened, it was that smartphone deal. Basically, you know, the announcement, they decided to come out and say, we have our next thing in the works, this is the code name, and that is all.
Yeah.
So when folks saw MH, they're just like, well, what is this and isn't real? We're here to tell you on this segment that apparently it's not. And this was cleared up by good friend of the show and always the man to talk to on Twitter for Japanese consultancy stuff, Dr. Serkan Toto, who basically tweeted that the analyst was picturing a scenario. And he does not define what MH means in the report, but is rather just saying this could happen, not that this is or based on any fact. And so people got crazy over this.
I mean, it seems like the whole report is a prediction. But MH is so specific.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, that seems very weird to be like, I have a prediction with a fake code name and everything, too.
My handheld.
I mean, the thing, it's not, like, continuing their portable business doesn't sound insane, you know?
No.
I think, like, dedicated handhelds overall are fading fast, I think, and especially as Nintendo themselves are getting into the mobile business. Maybe it's a little weird to consider a next-gen handheld, but also, like, it's not like the 3DS is going to be around forever.
I mean, what does next-gen handheld even mean, really?
The Nintendo 4DS. I don't know.
If you compare, like, the DS to the new 3DS, like, that's a different generation, but it was so incremental that it's, like, hard to you know, draw a line.
Like, if you walked by two kids playing both of those systems, first of all, you'd be like, why is one of you so much luckier than the other?
Yeah.
But secondly, you'd be like, these look like the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, from a distance, the especially like the DS XL versus the 3DS XL or the new 3DS XL look like the same things from the outside looking
out. Yeah, like the DSi versus the...
Yeah.
Yeah, and well, that's what's weird is like the Game Boy, like GBA to DS, even in terms of graphically, like you were going from Super Nintendo ports to N64 ports.
Yeah.
Know, like that became... So I guess if they're really... If I mean, just thinking graphically, I guess if it's like if they want to step it up one further and maybe even make it, I don't know, like scaled down GameCube ports or something, like I guess you can see a place for that. But I don't know if that's what people want anymore. You know, like that's the weird thing to me is like as they're finally embracing mobile, it's really interesting if they are even considering that right now, because like you would think they should focus on their console business. Like 3DS is doing fine.
But with each handheld that Nintendo puts out, they have at least sort of set this practice where, hey, this game that was a console game is now on this portable. And we saw that with Zelda, Ocarina of Time 3D. We saw that with Majora's Mask 3D as well. You can say that new 3DS pushed the boundary line a little further because you got Xenoblade Chronicles, which was a Wii game that showed up on that system. And when you obviously when you jump back through the generations, it changes, right? On DS, it was Super Mario 64 DS. That's what they called it, right?
Yeah.
I can't remember. It was some ridiculous name. And then there was, before that, you were looking at like Super Nintendo or even NES games, which, you know, whatever. I mean, anything can, anyone's cell phone can emulate that game now, it almost feels. Yeah.
But only this new 3DS can play Earthbound.
Yeah, but this has always been a boundary line that they've been kind of playing with. And so, regardless, I think, though, that just calling it a next generation system just refers to the generation itself and not necessarily like, whenever I hear Next Gen 2, I jump to the conclusion, oh, it must be the greatest graphics of, like, all time. I think it's just being trained from like the 90s and like 2000 in magazines
Maybe it literally means generation, as in a group of people born in a certain generation.
Hadn't even
thought about it that way.
So, I mean, I totally agree with all that. I also feel that we're kind of at the end of the DS lineage here. Like, I think not only in terms of what they've done with the entire line and the ideas that they can pull out of it, but also sort of the market impact that a system like that has. I think right now, and you kind of alluded to this, Andrew, like you're at a point in time where it's first of all, this could be the last handheld ever made.
I really don't want that.
I don't either. I love handheld gaming.
My mobile, because I have to use it for everything.
Right.
The same applies for everyone else. It runs out of battery really quickly.
Yes.
Yeah. Like you use it for so many things all the time and have so many apps open that you know, you don't have the luxury of your 3DS asking you, do you want to close this previous software? So your battery life lasts for a really long time. Yeah. Like,
And something you're hitting at there too that's very important is that you are completely unfocused when you're handheld gaming on an iPhone.
Yeah.
Because
you get notifications.
Yeah, like, you know, you were on a text chain or something and all these texts start coming in, or I get an email or something like that and my phone buzzes and I'm like, what's this? What's this? Your internet's there. Your work is there. Everything's there. On a 3DS, like I started playing. I've been flying back and forth across the country to spend time with family. I started playing Animal Crossing again because I think we were talking about it on the show. And I'm like, I really miss this game because it's peaceful. It's calm. It scales with
it's
how
so
much
comforting.
It is. It is. And it scales with how much I want to put into it. Like, I can go in for 5 minutes, shake some trees, make some money, check out what's going on in Tom Nook's hood.
Check out some weeds.
Yeah. Take us and sell some weeds and then get back out there and leave. Or I could like go to the island and go fishing for an hour and a half. And Nintendo, like I've noticed with Miitomo, has a very hard cap on how much time I can put into that game.
Yeah.
I'll maybe spend 6-7 minutes in it. If I poke around every corner of it, I'm pretty much done.
Change your outfit, listen to 10 answers.
So I think there's still room for a handheld in the traditional sense. But still in a way that's smart enough to compete with smartphones, because a lot of kids now just get hand-me-down smartphones and those become their games. Yeah. But still, there's so many things that can happen when you hand a kid a phone like that. He can get on the internet. He can, you know, ring up all these credit card charges. All these different things can happen. So I think whatever they do next has to be very smart. They do not have to worry about any competition coming from the Sony side. It's pretty safe to say that they'll never come. I don't think there'll be another video game company in the world that comes at their throat again.
So yeah, I think you're probably right.
Wise, of course, like Vita sales wise isn't going to hurt 3DS.
Yeah.
What I would like to see from them is that idea that I can buy a PS4 game and it's immediately cross play on my Vita. Like, if Nintendo is, if they are doing MH, if they are thinking handheld, I hope they're also thinking back and forth. I hope they're thinking of letting it speak to NX.
But they won't. And do you know why? Because what did you just buy on your 3DS recently?
Super Nintendo games that you already owned. Yeah, sure.
What did I buy last night? Link to the Past.
No, and they definitely got to get their act together there, right? Like, we've been asking for that. I mean, everyone's been asking for that forever,
but
right?
I'm not even saying money-wise. Yeah. Like, I'll buy it twice. Just let my save transfer back and forth.
So
I can see that happening.
Yeah, yeah. No, that I understand a lot. But I mean, like, we've been complaining about it on this show for years. But how do I complain? I throw my wallet at them every 6 months.
The gamepad, I feel like almost segued that. Like, even though it's still part of the same console, you know, someone else is watching TV while you're playing something, it feels separate from the TV.
It does.
Feels like that. Yeah, so it's like the gamepad, theoretically, in very specific circumstances, feels like a handheld.
It is. Yeah. And I like that. You know, I do like that.
I love that.
I played a lot.
Great. I wish every console had that.
I played a lot of, like, multi-platform games. Or the multi-platform games that came to Wii U, I played on that. Because it was just like, you know, we only had one TV in the house at the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, somebody else could use
it.
You
can walk around with it.
Yeah.
You can play it on a plane if you bring if you plug it into a power supply. Like,
I have almost done this. I have not. I've thought about it. I do want to push back a little on the idea, though, that Nintendo would be done with dedicated handheld devices only because their biggest successes as a company have come through handheld. 3DS and or DS.
Sure.
And the franchises specifically, right? Pokemon.
Yeah.
Will always be as a mobile, and I know people want it on console, and I get it, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that shouldn't exist, but a mobile Pokemon game will always be a thing that will drive Nintendo product. Mm-hmm. Mario Kart has been super successful as well. Smash Brothers, for the first time, that had never happened before. And you can make some complaints that it wasn't a perfect transition, but it was a good enough, if not a great transition, for that.
Yeah.
Animal Crossing, then you have third parties like Monster Hunter, which is the biggest feather, at least in their cap, in Japan, because Monster Hunter just sells and sells and sells and sells, and then it keeps selling for some reason.
It's a really good thing to play on handheld.
Yeah, and I love all those games. I played every single one of them. I will ride or die for handhelds until they're gone. The 3DS is, if you look at the sales between the last five or six Nintendo handhelds or handheld gaming in general, it's been in a serious decline.
Oh, no, for sure.
They bring
you
out way too many.
You went from 150 million on DS, right, to basically 50 million on your 3DS, which is totally a sign of the market, right, where everyone
went
mobile.
I think they can squeeze another 4 or 5 million out, too.
And to their credit, sorry, I just want to get this last point in, is that Sony and Nintendo went at it again this round, and Nintendo stuck with it and was able to turn it around and make it a success. Yeah. Whereas Sony's answer to, well, Vita's not doing so hot as well, let's just throw all our attention to PlayStation 4 and whatever can put over to it, and VR, but whatever we can get on here through cross-buy, we'll just toss it over there and that's it.
I feel like that to me is the big, like, aside from the health of handhelds, which is obviously a huge conversation to have separate from that, like, I just think Nintendo should, like, obviously NX should be their priority. Because 3DS, whether handhelds die or not, for the time being, it's fine. Wii U has had its struggles. Like, it's the reason this surprised me, seeing MH come out even as being something considered or theorized,
speculated,
is that like their problem right now is their console business, right? The handheld, regardless of the life of handhelds 5-10 years from now, like, right now 3DS is fine for another year. Mm-hmm. Like, don't even worry about MH, guys. Like, focus on NX. Like, that's why this is surprising to me, because, like, the fact that people would even speculate they'd be putting R&D into a handheld, like, I would think they're putting all hands on deck.
Well, yeah, and we don't know if NX includes plans for a handheld. That's the other side of this thing, where there have been rumors and speculation saying, hey, this can be two devices or two devices that will eventually play the same games. Mm-hmm. Whether or not we're seeing that at this launch in March 2017 remains to be seen.
Yeah.
But there's just so much what if, but I just feel like this was another example of, we're kind of desperate to hear anything right now.
Yeah,
and so this blew up. We screwed up. We reported it. Then we quickly were able to also put in there, look, this is not... this is not 100%. This appears to it's unclear what this means, and you know, a lot of what it meant got lost in translation, which is unfortunate. So we will obviously try to do better. But regardless, NX Debulin Scheiße continues, and we'll wrap it at least there. Anytime we need to kind of shoot down something, we'll do it under that label. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, Alana is going to kick off some talk on Minecraft's battle mode, which is cool. We're going to tell you how 500 Nintendo fans get to play Zelda E3, and it could be you, or at least you can check the site for that, and more. So we'll be right back. And welcome back. Jose Otero here with Alana.
Hi.
Andrew.
Hey.
And Brian.
Brap.
That's really the new brap? Just a single brap?
Just one for solidarity.
You need coffee.
What?
All right. In the world, I, I have no way to segue this other than to just tell you that Alana is going to talk about Minecraft's battle mode. Well, because it's Minecraft. Like, and if anything, there's always Minecraft is the most successful, amazing thing to happen in video games in the last 10 years. And at least I firmly believe that. I feel like most of this table believes that, right? Yeah, you better.
Or else you're out.
Or get out. So tell us about it. What you got to play this thing.
Yeah, yeah. I played it early last week. So Minecraft Battle Mode is a new series of minigames that's coming to Minecraft Console Editions, which means Xbox, PS4, Wii U. And it's basically taking popular mods that already exist on the PC community and then Mojang making them officially parts of Minecraft. So the first one, which I played, is Battle Mode. It's coming out, I think, sometime next month, but I should double check that. Mm-hmm. It's currently in beta, and it's basically the Hunger Games mod, which currently exists on PC. So if you haven't played that, it's really cool. You start... There's a matchmaking system that it has, so you get grouped with a bunch of other players, and there's up to 8 players on an online game. Nice. You spawn in a collection of different maps. I think it launches with a certain amount, but then further maps will be available for $2.99. And you're all facing a bunch of chests in the middle of an arena. And you have a countdown timer that tells you when you can run to the chests, and they have a bunch
of stuff
in them.
Sounds like the Hunger Games.
It is exactly Hunger Games. That's exactly what it is. Okay. The PC community refers to it as Hunger Games.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So you run to these chests, you grab a bunch of stuff out of them, and then you have an invincibility countdown that lets you run away and mm-hmm. kind of get your bearings, figure out where other players are, and then approach them and
that's so cool.
kill them.
Yeah.
But it also has... So all of that stuff already exists as a mod, but none of that stuff is automated. So it's like you have to just assume that other people, or at least from none of the ones I've played, have had countdowns built in or anything in the mods. So this is like Minecraft automating all of those processes to make sure that players don't really have to think about it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So then every, I think probably 30 seconds, but I didn't actually time it, the chests get filled again. So there's a noise. Kind of encouraging players to get back in the middle of the map to see what else is in the chest. And it seems to progressively get better, but it is all randomly generated.
Okay.
So then you have like this group of people running to get this stuff again and then running away and trying to kill each other one by one. So it's exactly Hunger Games in every way, but it's still very, very fun. And none of the original like core Minecraft PvP gameplay has been changed in any way, which is fine. Mm-hmm. Still just like hack and slashy, but this is just a really addictive thing. Like,
yeah,
I had
totally
a preview fun. That was, I think, for an hour, and I ended up playing for 3 hours on that side. Like,
wow.
I was just like, this is great!
It sounds like, awesome. Very chaotic.
It is pretty chaotic.
How big is like what Minecraft needed.
I know, totally.
Yeah. The maps vary in size, but I feel like they're all kind of perfectly sized, especially really well vertically scaled.
Okay.
So there's like a lot of different points, but at no point was I having trouble finding someone, even if the maps only had 4 people instead of 8.
Nice.
So,
okay.
And at the start, it tells you how many players there are and stuff
like that. Yeah,
because
I grabbed the thing in that chest and be like, you'll never see me again! And then, if the world was big enough.
I mean, you probably could do that, maybe. I think it'd be tough, but they're
they'll
really,
hunt
really
you
well scaled.
I'll win by default. That's the strategy.
No, they'll find you.
He's just talking about his actual Hunger Games.
If you get to the end and there's 2 people left, which there always will be, like if it's in the, I think, like minute left of the game, it gets into a showdown where I'm pretty sure you do more damage.
Oh,
so
nice.
It kind of encourages you to keep fighting at the end.
Okay.
But yeah, it's really, really fun. And this is just the first of a series of minigames they're planning to release. I don't know if these are all going to be similar to PC mods, and they haven't officially addressed that it is an exact clone of an existing PC mod, but I'm kind of happy about it. Like, even though they're taking things that community members have already made, they're making them more efficient and supporting them on
console. And it is a free update.
Yes.
The only thing you're paying for, to be specific, is maps, like you said. Okay.
Yep.
And I would assume Mojang's making
it gives
Mojang.
The game direction, you know? Like, because for me, my thing with Minecraft was it was almost, because I got into it way late, about when it came to 360, I guess, and it was kind of overwhelming almost. And even later, like playing PvP stuff, like I would have loved a directed, kind of concentrated, timed mode like that because I feel like that's more of a...
I mean...
Like that's an easier thing to wrap my head around, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's like it depends on player versus player. Like, my favorite way to play Minecraft is just chuck a bunch of my friends on a server, and then I will just go in and build whatever the hell I want, and then leave, go back, look at what other people have built while I've been out of the server. Like,
while you talk about...
I, without direction, can spend a lot of time playing Minecraft.
And you can spend all that time talking about Game of Thrones or talking about whatever you want. Yeah. It's kind of the ultimate chill game in that way.
It's, to me, it's just like the same as I would sit down with a blank piece of paper and draw something. Like, Minecraft is just like, I'm going to build the coolest thing I can build, I'm going to make it look super weird, and then I'm going to leave, and I'm going to see what all these other people in this cool gallery that we have as a server have built too. Like, I love that about Minecraft, but obviously that's not for everyone, which is why these mods exist, is to entertain people who want more of the PvP aspects, I guess. So, yeah, for someone like you, it's perfect, and it is very fun, and it adds extra content to a game, and I'm happy that this is the first of a few of these things that they're going to be making. If for something in beta, it ran absolutely perfectly.
I think it's pretty awesome that they have this like sort of combat-driven minigame in a game that you don't really think of combat as the first thing.
I avoid it in Minecraft usually.
100%. Yeah. I mean, the survival elements of it are usually like, there's a skeleton over there. I'm going to walk in the other direction. I'm not going to get stabbed. I'm not going to get killed. He's shooting me with arrows. Oh, my God, I'm dead.
Spawn, I'm going to build this like crappy house out of completely dirt and then stay in there until sunrise. Like, So they're focusing
on... I've done that so many times.
Right?
That's how I start every game.
It's
the first night.
Better build some dirt.
The sun's going down.
Exactly.
Yep.
And you come back the next day, you're like, I'm going to make a dirt into a wood house.
Sitting on the ground and just hearing... And just thinking the most
just
random
waiting
things
for it because you can't get a bed yet. So you're just like, oh, God. Basically every single time. But I think, yeah, this just adds something extra. And admittedly, the Minecraft combat has never been great.
So will this work with pre-existing skins? Because I'm really interested to see how this would play out on like the new Mario stuff they put in.
I mean, they haven't said anything officially about that, but I can't imagine why it wouldn't work.
Yeah,
because like, they have Mario and Skyrim right now.
Yeah, because Jose and I did like, a Let's Play the other day checking out all the new skins. So this would be like some sort of like weird warped Smash Brothers game in a way.
Kinda.
Have you seen what the characters look like in the new Mario skin?
They look awesome.
Did you see Petey Piranha?
No.
He looks like a dinosaur dude in a thong.
I did not see that.
He's just like,
I saw like all the main characters.
We made it worse by putting, what suit did I put on
You put
him?
The frog suit on him.
On him, yeah.
Which is just terrifying. Because like, he's got his like flower lips coming through. And it's just all, the whole thing's terrifying.
That's all you can see is just the lips. The rest is the frog suit. Yep. So imagine like the big frog eyes and just these really ugly but large, like, what's the plant in Little Shop of Horrors? I'm forgetting.
Seymour.
Seymour, like lips.
Yeah, he looks a lot like that's that. So that and like a PvP sort of scenario, hunting over treasure
chests.
Actually,
you'll win because they'll run away.
Yeah.
Yeah, one of the people that I was playing with was a spider. So, you know, you can play as pretty much whatever you want, I think.
Yep.
And it has this thing, which I don't actually get, where at the end of each round, you're kind of dropped into a physical lobby, which is actually pretty cool. But, you know, you finish your round, it tells you like who got the most kills, who... I guess kind of a KTD almost, and it tells you like what your favorite weapon was and kind of stats that used to exist in like Perfect Dark used to tell you that kind of stuff. And then that screen goes away and you have 30 seconds of just this kind of little hub world where you can't do anything. Like, not that I could see, like there's just steel doors everywhere that don't have openings, so you're just like in this hub world waiting for the next game.
Oh, it's just a
metaphor
for life. That's what
steel doors you can't
get. A little jail simulator.
It's a little bit of commentary.
Life is also in open beta. I don't know.
It may have been that I missed something, but there wasn't really anything to do there. But I should also note, so that my preview is up on the website, and so is like 21 minutes of gameplay, and I've gotten so many angry comments of people being like, you clearly don't know how to play Minecraft, because this is my first time ever playing it on console. I didn't know how to sprint. And at first...
Yeah, it's kind of finicky on console, because you have to like,
I didn't know what button I was supposed to press at all. Like, there was a lot of stuff that I didn't really know how to do. So I was just like, I don't even like know how to get everything in my inventory and how to move it around effectively, except just like...
I did like a year's worth of Minecraft Let's Plays for IGN with Greg Miller back when he worked here, and the whole series was us learning the game on the fly. And we were like, there's plenty of expert videos out there on YouTube and all those other places. We're going to start from scratch and like
figure it out as you go.
Oh man, the first like 10 episodes, the comments were like,
people are really angry.
Why are you punching the trees? You're punching the stones. You don't need to do. We didn't know what we were doing.
Yeah,
we didn't learn how to run until like 20 episodes in.
Yeah,
like it doesn't directly tell you everything.
That was one of my favorite things about it when I started playing.
Totally, and I think I think a lot of people will really appreciate that, you know?
Yeah. A lot of comments are really angry, but the video still shows off the game modes really well.
Yeah.
I still won a bunch of them, so I'm clearly not that bad. When I first started playing...
Spider has like 8 arms, so he really should have won.
That's true.
Yeah.
She's a lady, actually, Helen.
There you go.
When I first started playing Minecraft, I always preferred it on PC, and then I think I played it on Xbox 360 maybe once and stopped because it tells you the recipes for everything, or
yes,
it's something along the lines
of it tries to hold your hand a little more than Minecraft ever.
And one of my favorite things about Minecraft was like, what the hell is this? How the hell do I make this thing that I saw vaguely on the internet? Like, it was so mysterious.
No,
I was
you're
excited
totally
about
right.
Finding
the,
stuff out.
The recipe stuff got kind of put into the console version of the game with a click of a button where you can see everything you need to make.
Yeah, and I didn't like that.
Yeah, because I started on the PC version as well, and I was like, how do I make an axe?
And I'd be like,
I think it's a stone and a stick and maybe some rope.
So you'd like screw around with it, or if I couldn't figure it out, I'd ask someone else in the community or I would have to like look it up on Wikipedia. And I love that aspect of it and the mystery of it, which it doesn't quite have on console.
Yeah.
I remember very specifically there was an entire like – there was a Minecraft – it was like, I don't even know the name. It was like a Wikipedia for just Minecraft.
Yes. Do you know what I had that tab.
Yeah, I forget what it was. I had the tab open for a very long time, too. It was Blockopedia.
Yeah.
And it gave you every single recipe. Yeah. And I hope that website's still up because a lot of cool people worked on it. But then they just took all that stuff and put it right in the console version. So if you download the Wii U version today, not only will you get the Mario stuff, but all of the recipes are in there. Like even like cooking is in there. Like
that said, I also think that Wii U is such a perfect platform for Minecraft with the gamepad.
Yeah.
Like, that just seems like way better than any other console version. I haven't played it on Wii U, but I imagine that's a really efficient way to play it.
Well, it would be. I mean, the thing that is unfortunate about the Wii U edition of Minecraft is that they didn't choose to take advantage of that second screen
as
inventory. Yeah. And, you know, to be fair, like, I don't know the reasons why, what the business reasons are, if they didn't want to spend more time or more money to kind of get it done.
I just love the idea of using a stylus to like drag stuff around my inventory on that screen.
Yeah.
That sounds
awesome. I was after playing hundreds of hours of Minecraft, I was really bummed when it came to Wii U and you couldn't do that. I still love it there, but it was like, it seemed like a miss to not have, especially for recipes or building and stuff like that, to not be able to do that. And then it is weird that they were like, it seemed like they weren't putting any more work into it. And then they put out that Mario pack, which is like arguably more work than I've seen them put in any Minecraft version.
Yeah, I mean,
so.
It seems like this year they're kind of getting back into Minecraft.
Yeah,
yeah. But I think the story there is just keeping all versions the same, which is unfortunate that, you know, and again, we don't know the full story, but it is a disappointment.
If it's a Microsoft choice,
or 4J or Mojang didn't come to the conclusion of, hey, we need to better take advantage of this.
No, but I mean, you know, if you're Microsoft, you're not going to be like, well, let's make this game objectively better to play on a competitive console, you know?
Sure.
There's that angle, but then there's also, like, what's Minecraft on Vita like before we move on? Like, does your touchscreen work in that way as well?
It's sort of become, I mean, no.
No.
It should. That should also be a thing there.
It wasn't that different. It was, you still had to pull up the menu because you still only have the real estate of one screen.
Okay.
So if I remember correctly.
Yeah, but even when you pull up that menu, it is cool to just quickly tap what you want and then get it moving.
God, I only played when it first came out, but if I remember right, it was still pulling up menus and tapping on. Like, it wasn't that.
No, because I know
a
lot of
the mobile version when it first came out. Honestly.
Okay, yeah, no, because a lot of but that one has a touchscreen.
Yeah,
I bring it up because a lot of folks I know were really burned by, oh man, we made it forever for Minecraft to finally hit Wii U, and when it did, it wasn't what we were hoping for. It wasn't taking advantage
of that. Wasn't Wii U optimized?
Yeah. But at the end of the day, I mean, look at where Wii U's life cycle is right now, and like, you can make the argument, was it worth doing that?
Yeah,
I don't know. You can look at it.
I mean, the good thing is like they have a Nintendo version of Minecraft now, and if it's so, and you could basically launch the NX with Nintendo Minecraft on day one, and I'm pretty into that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, cool. So then lastly, we're moving on to, or actually we have two stories left, but 500 Nintendo fans are going to get to play Zelda at E3.
Why are you so happy? You're not going to be one of those people.
This is why it's cool, because it's not at E3, it's during E3.
Yeah.
It's at the Nintendo World Store in New York.
Oh, thanks for correcting me.
Oh, what?
Well, and we were just talking about, this and beyond. Very quickly, E3 just announced a thing called E3 Live, which is a public version of E3, and this is even sort of an extension of that, right? Nintendo traditionally did all this cool stuff at Best Buy stores where you could play all
Smash demos and Mario Kart
and all that
stuff.
I think 3D World was there. Like, you could play stuff outside of E3. I love that they're continuing that, because I went to my first E3 in high school, and I think it's what led me to be in this industry. And I love that there are 500 people who are going to be super dedicated. They're going to wait in line. They're going to be hot as hell waiting in Rockefeller Center, but they're going to get to play Zelda early, and that's awesome.
Yeah, signups for the event are taking place on June 11th. All you got to do is show up with photo ID. Kids have to be present with parent or guardian, and if you're one of the first 500 people in line, you'll receive a wristband, so you can trade it in for a demo. For a ticket to the demo event. Oh, God, someone's going to sell that wristband.
Oh,
like, you can totally.
But just imagine
totally
being
see
like
it already.
16 or whatever, in college or whatever it is. And
even
you
now,
and
dude. Even now. Like,
seriously.
The worst thing about IGN at going to E3 is that there are so many people working in IGN and there's so many different things that have to be covered that I can't go do stuff like that. Like, yeah. I would love to be able to play Zelda at E3. Don't see it happening for me at all.
It's a stupid complaint, but we actually don't play a ton of video games at E3. It's mostly
because we can't,
stuff.
Really. Yeah.
But I remember, it's funny that you... I just thought about that, about, yeah, it's going to be sweltering hot outside of the Nintendo World Store.
Because
I was there.
Brutal.
I was there for the Super Mario Galaxy 2 launch. Was it? You were there too, right?
Yeah, so weirdly I was, which is so bizarre.
Before Goldfarb and I met each other. And it was it was in like November and it was freezing.
It was so cold, yeah.
It was like you couldn't move.
And that's the funny thing about New York. The global 3DS launch was there. Yeah. It was actually where I met Rich, who used to do Nintendo stuff here. But yeah, it was freezing. It was like mid-March in Union Square at that Best Buy was where they happened to do the global launch of 3DS. And like Reggie made a speech and it was cool, but I was like shivering.
Yep.
Yeah. And prepare you for that, I see.
New York weather sucks.
I was actually just in...
Hey,
I love New York.
Real. Talk to the three biggest New York fans.
75%.
Take that, Australia.
I was in that... I was there three...
Sorry.
Yeah, hold on. Wait a minute. You're from Australia. You can't talk about how bad New York
really
weather is.
It was also really hot when I was in Australia.
When I was there, it was like... I don't know what it would have been in Fahrenheit, but it was so cold that I started crying walking down the street. That was for Toy Fair.
Oh, and you were sick before you went, right?
Yeah, I had that pneumonia, and it was early February, and I was legitimately crying in a way that I was almost sobbing walking down the street because the hotel was like 15 minutes away from the convention center, and I was just like...
And you can't do that because...
New York weather chat, NYWC.
The tears will freeze and fall off your face.
Yeah, and just burned.
No, side note, I was in the Nintendo World store in New York City like 3 weeks ago,
now it's Nintendo World New York.
I haven't seen it since it's been updated.
I believe so, yeah.
It's really
cool.
You
should go to IGN and look at our gallery via Miranda Sanchez of 64 photos of.
That's right. When I was there, they had the Star Fox puppets that they had at E3 that were part of last year's Nintendo Direct, I believe. Mm-hmm. It's really cool stuff. There's the Miyamoto puppet in there. There's when you first walk in, there's this autograph of Miyamoto kind of welcoming you into the store that he just did a couple weeks ago. Mm-hmm. So yeah, go check that place out, even if you can't play Zelda
I've
there.
I bought a bunch of like... A Pikachu shirt there, and I kept the bag just because it says like Nintendo World Store.
It's awesome.
It's like this image of Link. No. And
it's really cool
it's really
stuff.
Cool, yeah.
All right. So lastly, on news, and then we're pretty much – we probably got time for one question from the question block, is Monster Hunter now has – Monster Hunter Stories. Now, we gotta take a minute here. Monster Hunter Generations is a game that's coming out this summer to North America. But Monster Hunter Stories is a game that's coming out in Japan that is – much different in terms of art direction and in terms of character. There seems to be a lot more story to it and more characters in it overall.
This like
is coming
out. Is
this
a GTA thing?
No.
Like Liberty City Stories?
Maybe. But it's definitely way more kid-friendly. If you see the artwork.
I would assume so.
just want to put that out there.
That Chinatown Wars drug.
You can't hit a cop with your car.
I didn't mean that kid-friendly.
But also,
I mean,
there's no car.
But you smack a dragon in the face with like a huge broadsword.
That's true.
Like,
that's true.
There's a thing
you do
going
poach.
No, but it's basically a cuter, more RPG-esque take of an action RPG series. Okay. It looks fantastic. There's a new trailer. You should definitely check that out on the site. But this game got its release date for Japan, which is this October 18th. It's coming out over there. Again, new trailer looks awesome, but it's also getting amiibo support. And
this is
the interesting story. Yeah, there's a one-eyed Rathalos that you ride through the game. Rathalos is one of the monsters from the game. Brian is picturing many different monsters, but I will show him what it looks like later. And they have a female and a male version of it as riding a Rathalos amiibo. Are you okay?
I wasn't until you said that.
Okay, and then there's also, I don't know how to pronounce this, but Naribu is the last amiibo. So the two, basically Rathalos and a rider, either female or male, are roughly $16. It's 1,800 yen. And then Nibiru is 1,200 yen. And
so
it looks like one of the Monster Hunter cats.
I think they look really cool. Like, I think in the way that I think the Link and Midna Wolf figure is kind of an evolution of the amiibo art style.
Yep.
These look rad.
Is this the first time they've actually like varied price range on amiibo? Like, are they scaling by quality?
Well, no, because Mega Yarn Yoshi is like $40.
Well, so, I mean, yeah, I don't know
I'm
if he counts.
I'm still not clear if Capcom is making these or Nintendo is making these.
I think that's a more interesting point.
They don't look like Nintendo's figures at all. They don't have the coin base.
This is the first third-party Amiiboid?
Second, technically, because Shovel Knight was the first. Yeah.
That is just one. So I think this is actually really scary for Amiibo collectors. Like, well, this is a precedent that's like,
oh, they've been scared.
Is this going to keep happening forever? Like, when does it end?
It's crazy that we still don't even have Cloud and Corrin and Bayonetta yet, right?
Yeah, those don't have.
There was like a very, very low res image of them going around the other day that I don't know if it was real or not.
Did
you guys see that? You don't think so?
I don't think so. I mean, they haven't said a word like officially to anybody,
and it's about time for them. Like the gap, if you look at sort of the waves of these, like as they got to the DLC ones, like because we got Ryu and Roy a while ago.
Yeah,
but I do really like the idea of them. I mean, and they've like you said, the Mega Yarn Yoshi. They have toyed with the idea of. No pun intended, scaling what I know, what an amiibo can be, right? It's basically anything that has, and we've like debated that on this show of like, what is an amiibo? Like, could it be a 70-foot tall man with a chip in his foot?
Needs to have a cool bit of foil in its butt. That's fine.
That was what was so cool when they, not even the mega yarn, but just the regular yarn Yoshi, like kind of brought that conversation of like, oh, these things aren't all going to look exactly the same.
Totally. And when we talked to Miyamoto, and I'm forgetting the other gentleman in the room, and I should know this, but in 2014 we had an interview, you and
Bill Trinan.
No, of course Bill was there. How else are we going to understand Miyamoto? He's just like, that's great.
When we walk in, I thought it went great.
Yeah. No, but at that interview, I'm forgetting his name. I'm going to hate that. Basically, they said to us, we can make an amiibo any shape and size.
I know. And
anything
they
want to do. And you were like, take a tall one. I'm like, no, don't. Like, I don't even want to know what that's going to cost.
I was young and full of ideas back then. I didn't know how much money I'd put into amiibo.
Whether they were good or not, though, is the question.
I love the Mega Yon Yoshi.
They did tell us about that R-Wing amiibo, the transforming one that never happened.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of bums me out. It actually bums me out that we didn't get any new Star Fox amiibo.
Oh, God, I'd love to see them articulated.
I know.
Yeah.
I know.
I know. That's the big question for me as just like a toy nerd is like, when will we get just like a super robust Nintendo action figure, essentially like a line of figures that has a chip at the bottom and can be an amiibo. Like,
I think for them the big hurdle is, I mean, clearly I think stuff like that is on the table, because every time Nintendo seems to open its mouth about whatever gaming initiatives it has, it's also opening its mouth about its other entertainment, amiibo, your phone and it, whatever, what have you. I just feel like the bigger question for them, though, is how can we do it ourselves?
Right.
Yes.
And that's been the hurdle the entire time in this process.
I'm so hoping that NX, like, it'll obviously have NFC support to some degree, but I'm really hoping that's when they figure out what this platform is. Because, like, with Disney Infinity and Skylanders and all these other Toys to Life things, like, you understood that, like, there was a platform for these things.
Yeah.
Whereas with Amiibo, like, yes, they've been compatible with games to get power-ups, and it gets really fun training a character in Smash, but it's not like there's an Amiibo game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to see what sort of the end game of Amiibo is, or if it'll just continue being sort of an augmented thing for individual games.
I always saw Amiibo as just being collector's items that happen to have software features.
Me too.
Maybe that's all it'll be. Like, there's nothing wrong with
that. I don't think... I don't know... When
I really like
this, might be heresy to some here, but I have not been blown away by either Infinity or Skylanders in terms of as a game. Like, Skylanders is very much Gauntlet, which is fun, but it has these figures sort of shackled to it, which is fine. But
doesn't need them. I think Skylanders is just as fun without
things. Could exist without it.
Yeah.
And in Infinity
is awesome.
It is awesome because it's Disney. R.I.P. Pour one out. But. At least as far as sort of, again, just still felt like a platforming game that didn't need it. You needed it to get that character, but if that character was available from the start, like,
what was it
really?
Skylanders, when does this air?
This will air tomorrow.
Yeah,
okay, so I have an embargo for next week on the Skylanders. I'm going to be writing a preview next week, which is a really... interesting way to deal with Toys to Life that I'm actually pretty excited about.
So it would be an awesome continuation of what we're basically talking about. Okay, we should talk to you next week to hear more about this.
It's really cool, but Disney Infinity, I think, had kind of the same appeal as Amiibo in that they are really well-designed, good-looking figures.
I love the style.
Right, so you own some without... Have you ever even played
them
in a game?
A little bit, but yeah, I've like previewed it. But yeah, no, I never owned Disney Infinity, but I have like five of the figures.
I have
the third one.
I have a whole bunch of the Star Wars ones on my desk.
Yeah.
But there's something like to piggyback on that. I think they actually, and the Smash Brothers line got close, but I think Disney Infinity kind of topples Amiibo in the way that there's a uniform design to everything that gets put into there.
Yes, they all look really good next to each other.
Yeah, and they look like toys with articulation, but they're not, you know, and that's like, you look at Buzz Lightyear and you look at Kylo Ren, and you're like, you're part of the same universe.
Yeah.
I mean, again, rest in peace to that game. I don't know exactly what went wrong there. I think with Skylanders, it was a different story because, like, as a Nintendo fan, I'll go buy an amiibo based on a character I only barely know because he's a Nintendo character. She's a Nintendo character. Yeah. She's really cool. With Skylanders, it was sort of like you needed that hook of that game to get people to buy, like, Joey the Green Rock
kind of,
or whatever.
Right. So you, like, get given a starter pack and they kind of decide which Skylanders you get. And I kind of feel like the appeal of those toys comes after the experience that you get in the game.
Yes.
So you're like, this is character's voice. This character does this. Like, Spyro's voice, despite him looking kind of terrifying now, is really cute. Like, he's a likable character. So it's, you like those characters because of the software, whereas the other two haven't had that.
And that's what I mean. They're driven by characters you know, and you just go, oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, but that's why, like, imagine something like, I hate to bring up Nintendo Land. I know it's controversial, but, like, imagine...
I love Nintendo
Land. Controversial.
Like, imagine, like, an RPG-like game or something.
Yeah, dude, gauntlet with amiibo?
And, and where it's, like, you can play as Link for part of it, and then Samus unlocks a whole different area.
If you could play Skylanders with amiibo, which I guess you kind of...
Oh, yeah, with Bowser.
I think they need that right now, too. I think they need this sort of, like, and I'm, this is coming from the perspective of somebody who's mostly a lapsed amiibo collector. Like, I got almost the entire set of Smash Brothers stuff. And I got a couple here and there. Like, I got Tom Nook. I got Shovel Knight.
There's, like, still a couple that I want. Like, I don't have King Dedede yet.
I've avoided that bug somehow. Like, I have the Earth, I have Lucas and Ness, and I have the three Yoshis, and I have Mega Yarn Yoshi.
Yeah.
And those are the only ones that, other than customs.
Well, the thing is, when I started collecting amiibo, it was like, I'm going to get Smash Brothers set, this is finite. And then that goalpost kept moving as they kept adding new characters.
That's why
it
was like one of the best business decisions they've made in a really
sure,
long
of
time.
Course, but I think it needs a shot in the arm now, you know?
Yeah. But I do think their approach was smart in that, okay, if the Smash set is all following the Smash design aesthetic, so basically you can put all these characters together just like we do in these Smash games.
That's true.
And that looks fine. The Kirby set is done under a different art direction.
That's a really good point. They do a Disney Infinity kind of thing with the sets. Like, the Smash Bros. Set all look good together.
The Mario set's uniform as well.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I don't think we got it until, or at least I didn't understand it until that. When I saw the red bases, I was like, oh, that's what they're doing.
Yes.
Yeah. I just, whatever, you know, we've been talking on this show for a while about the idea of an amiibo-driven game.
Mm-hmm.
A game that is purely made just to support them. I just hope it's done in a smart way because at least the other products I've seen have not pulled my attention in a strong way, and that worries me because I'm the guy who's going to want to play that game. Well, whenever Nintendo software comes along, whenever any game tries
like
something,
obviously
with the
works with Skylanders, and Skylanders to me is really similar to a Gauntlet or a Diablo, a very light Diablo. Like, if they did that with Nintendo characters,
well, I can tell you what doesn't work, and it's pretty much everything. All the standalone amiibo products they've done so far haven't worked for me.
Oh, like Amiibo Festival?
Agree. The thing I used most was Smash. Like, I actually used my Charizard with Smash quite a bit to a friend's house. Like,
I did that. I mean, like, maybe like a Subspace Emissary style thing, but taken a little more seriously, I think could make.
And I like the added value of doing stuff like scanning it into Mario Maker and Mario Kart and stuff like that.
So the worst idea was the Amiibo Tap Nintendo's Greatest Bits or whatever. That was the worst idea ever because you were basically using Amiibo to unlock demos for virtual console games, which is just like, why would you do that? Okay, that to me was the worst. Then you had Mario Party 9, which was whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Then you had the Animal Crossing game, which was an okay board game, but it just needed to kind of stop holding your hand as much as it did.
What's the one that just came out?
The last game, though, I was going to bring that up. So
did we ever talk about
software
that?
You got, we didn't, and we should, because that game's pretty good. Yes. Yeah, the Mini Mario and Friends game is actually a pretty good game, but again, not the best display of what Amiibo can do because it is following more of that Skylanders, hey, you're using this character, now you can play these stages and you're able to be
effective. And it's free, right?
It is a free thing. Yeah, you can get it on your Wii U right now or your 3DS right now, and we should have talked about it by now, so I apologize for that.
I think the attitude Nintendo has towards this is just they never want to stop anyone from being able to play software.
Yes.
They never want to make you buy an Amiibo to be able to play a new game.
Yep.
So if it were to work like a Skylanders, it would have to be like, I mean, how? Like they would still be locking a game away behind Amiibo, which is something that they really don't want to do. Like, yeah. What's the way that they can make it work without limiting other people from playing it?
Yeah, they're in a very weird chicken and egg situation with stuff like that. I was like, I think they want an excuse to make Splatoon Amiibos, right? Because they're like, this is, we love these characters. We're proud of them. They're cool. People are going to want these things. What do they do in the game?
Oh, they gave you extra stuff every
Yeah,
day,
they just,
or?
It was like.
And like Callie and Marino, I think, just do soundtrack stuff, if I'm not
Yeah,
right.
soundtrack
yeah.
stuff. I believe.
So like each one of them has a little thing connected to it, but ultimately what you're buying into is to have a really cool figurine
Absolutely.
On your desk.
Yeah, and so, you know, Nintendo seems to be aware of the problem. I mean, one of the things Kimishima said in some of the interviews he's had over the past year since he's been president, it hasn't hit a year yet, but is that they're very aware that people are buying Amiibo but not using them in games.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I do think, though, you can't have it both ways, right? Like, it has to be either we're locking something out of this game because we're going to put it behind Amiibo, or we're not, and we're just trying to make this as a cool addition, a cool extra that you get for this thing you put on your shelf.
Yeah,
I definitely understand the complaints on the side of the folks who want the Amiibo game. I'm just not the guy who cares that much for the Amiibo game. I think what they're doing so far is okay. Could it be better?
I
think so. I do think so.
The appeal of it to me is if it were to be an NX thing, if it were to be in a year or whatever, and they said, hey, those figures you've been collecting for almost 2 years now, surprise, everything you already have will work with this. I think that's a really cool proposition.
I think that'll be the proposition. They're going to basically say every Amiibo you own will work with NX. And I would be shocked beyond belief if that became the story, because they're still producing these things. They're still trying to sell them. If anything, the saddest disappointment with Amiibo to me today is that every time I walk into a store, it is overflowing with Animal Crossing Amiibo.
Yeah.
And I think that they really miscalculated on that game.
They did.
And on those characters, and which is unfortunate, because Animal Crossing, in every other context that it's been published on, has been a success.
Yeah.
It has, up until Amiibo Festival. Even Happy Home Designer and the cards did better.
Yeah.
But the scary thing is that if you read when Disney Infinity went down and Kotaku broke that story, if you read some of the interviews with the people who were working on it, one of the things they said was like, oh, we had a bunch of Yondus from Guardians of the Galaxy. We produced way more than we could ever actually
sell. People don't
actually
care about it.
Yeah.
I feel like that is the end.
Well, that's what Nintendo's been trying to avoid, at least with the Smash set. And when they first started, remember how hard these things were to get? It was also because Nintendo has a very tight attitude to, we don't flood the market with product.
Weirdly enough, but that worked for them, though.
Well, Alana, you're familiar with the term peg warmers.
What?
Peg warmers. You guys have never heard this?
Yeah, the ones in a wave that no one wants. That just
put out Force Awakens came out last year, and they put out all those toys for it. And this guy Constable Zuvio, they called him the peg warmer, because every time you go in a store, he's sitting
there.
There's always the one like sort of figure that just hangs out on the shelves forever, warms the pegs.
Yoda and Snake.
I wonder who that would be in the Mario set, but we should answer that next time, because we've actually got to go. We've got probably. We've got to run, but before we do, if you're a big fan of Nintendo game history, Star Tropics has gotten a resurrection on Wii U Virtual Console, which is kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
So Star Tropics, the original, and Zoda's Revenge, Star Tropics 2. Fun fact, Genyo Takeda worked on both of these games, who is the chief technology sort of fellow at Nintendo today.
Yeah, they're cool, kind of top-down Zelda-esque action RPG-ish type of games.
I've never played the Star Tropics.
Yeah, I think you'd like them. Yeah, you guys would like them.
My kind of game.
Try them out. They're very cool.
Zelda-ish. Done.
Right? And with that, we got to go. Thank you for listening to Nintendo Voice Chat. We are a weekly show on IGN. Obviously, you can find us a bunch of ways, but make sure you head on over to IGN.com. Lastly, you should send us feedback to MVC@IGN.com. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I got to make sure you have that. But share your Twitter handles.
Agent Bizzle.
Garfep.
Charalanazad.
Spell that.
CharalanaHzard.
Nice. And I'm Jose_Otero. Thank you very much for listening / watching, and we'll be back next week with more Nintendo Voice Chat.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Burntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.